All right. So thank you very much to Eldridge and Deborah for organizing this, and it's a real pleasure to be here. So I'm going to give a paper called Pataphysics of Exploding Heads. Last night I dreamed I had my head in the clouds, pillowy shapes taking form as conversations, slowly condensing as heartbeats and metronomes. The clouds spoke to me, sang to me, encouraged me, explained to me where I was and what I was doing, like some strange kind of life coach for an imaginary journey. They had voices, soothing, hypnotic, persuasive voices that knew how I was doing, felt my frustrations and my aspirations, and monitored my progress as I moved through life. The voices were immersive. I felt them more than heard them, coming from deep inside my head. They were buoyant too, speaking in motivational tones that lifted me to emotional and physical heights. I was dreaming of having my head in the clouds after all, and of having the clouds in my head as well. I awoke with the lingering feeling that I had experienced this relationship before. I quickly realized where: a crowdfunding campaign for a set of smart headphones calibrated to gather performance metrics and provide real-time feedback to the user. The headphones are not on the market yet, but are currently being dreamed by engineers, capitalists, and consumers alike, already incorporated into the very fabric of the human imagination, like the clouds during my sleep. The feedback loop of the story is such as to literally materialize dreams while throwing into question the subjectivity of the dreaming mind. It's a scale shift of sorts, making dreams real and turning reality into its own kind of dream, effectively collapsing the difference between the two, or at least making rhetorical separation contingent on constant relational attention. Swap dreams for virtuality. Adapt analogy as a governing analytic principle. Embrace what sleep researchers call dream incorporation as the logic of technological integration. The result is a reversal of the dream phenomena called exploding head syndrome, normally understood as the experience of hearing a loud sound at the edge of sleep, but in this case, just the opposite. The dream makes a loud sound and has a tangible impact in the material world. And as a result, I begin to realize that I'm already being dreamed by machines even before they're fully invented, motivationally facilitated in ways as much pedagogical as political. We are becoming new subjects of a pataphysical regime of smart devices that link us to ourselves in ever more extended and complex ways, digitally rescaling the human imagination in the process. Now, the device that influenced this dream is not just any device. It was the Braggy Dash, a set of high-tech earbuds that connect wirelessly to each other to attach peripherals and, of course, to the cloud. They do what any headphones do, they play music, but they also promise new degrees of sonic control over individualized experience. Noise-canceling technology that allows for an immersive experience of silence, blocking out all sounds except for the voice of the device itself. They also enable audio transparency if one's preference is to hear everything, overlaying the sounds of the audible world on top of the music. The earbuds contain a microphone that records one's voice through the jawbone, grabbing words from the mouth even before they're breathed into the air and making them digitally transmittable to others. It also measures body temperature, heart rate, and blood oxygen levels by flashing infrared beams into the ear to detect minute fluctuations in pulse. Taken together, these features provide a robust biomapping platform that more than satisfies the criteria used in biofeedback geography for calculating a person's emotional state. This to say that the device not only knows what you're doing, it knows how you are feeling. But on top of all of this, the Dash is an interactive feedback agent, giving real-time spoken input on performance, updating the user on the status of a workout, making suggestions for how one might further optimize activities, and of course, promising to share all this instantly with one's social network. But what's so interesting about the device is not just the itemization of technical features. It's the promise of an emotional and imaginative augmentation, the promise to help us dream a better version of ourselves. Any performance-enhancing technology ostensibly makes this promise, but the Dash does it slightly differently, through sound alone. There's no screen, there's simply a voice inside one's head sharing information about what is happening in one's body and mind. there's an intimacy to the interface, an integration of biometric data and motivational speaking that highlights the ability of sound to augment the transparency of technological integration. This suggests that in the Braggy Dash, there is an emergent form of audio reflexivity, a data mirror in the form of a voice that comments and advises on the body's performance in ways that, like the optical mirror before it, shape the fantasy of self and the contingencies of technological identity. In his book, Exits to the Post-Human Future, Arthur Croker meditates provocatively on the new capacity of iPhone technologies to synchronize hearts and smartphones, reflecting on the biofeedback sensors that allow users to actually send heartbeats through haptic vibration to one another. While at first this sort of feature seems like merely a gimmick, for Croker, it can be seen as nothing short of a new language of emotional computation. The new generation of wearables has outgrown the idea that electronic brains can only think or analyze or process data. Devices now aspire to becoming fully integrated biological systems. Technology now has a heart, our heart. And as we synchronize with each other in a digital embrace, so too do we transform the electronic global brain into a distributed heartbeat. This can be such a smooth transition, Croker notes, because for the language of computation, there's no longer any qualitative difference between the act of measuring and the act of sharing. The ability to share data, to amalgamate and synthesize and evaluate and optimize and broadcast, is already built into every act of digital measurement. Indeed, part of the social exhilaration with these new distributed parameters lies precisely in the ability to have devices that share our own information back to us, informing us about lives we didn't even know we were leading. Kept in the loop by our own devices. But the device knows it first, knows us better than we know ourselves. And that's the part that's a little bit complicated. To think about it pragmatically, it's to note that this kind of pervasive broadcast intimacy is really just another symptom of the paradoxical trajectories within which we already live. Media-linked bodies and minds seamlessly juggle feeds of all sorts, from preteens mugging the camera on YouTube to cell phone streams of police brutality, from cat videos to Facebook posts, from digital boredom to surveillance anxiety, to inspirational motivation in the form of the voices of the devices inside our heads. And Croker's framework is apt, for we live in integrated times, in times in effect where all of these things happen all the time, at the same time, in us and around us, observed and measured and instantaneously shared. And it would be easy to just say that it seems like a sci-fi dream and leave it at that, but to push the speculative point would be to try and do one better, to actually try out the language of dreams and see if it works, if it yields some kind of insight or framing device that could be a useful addition to the understanding of technology. For dreams have never been accountable to logic. Rather, dreams create and sustain narratives despite logic, beginning first with the imperative for an integrated outcome and then amalgamating disparity, however necessary, in order to hold the experience together. Dreams put complexity first, and in this, they have the potential to resonate with the actuality of digital living in ways that more linear or literal forms of understanding can only approximate. The logic of dreams is slippery, though, entwining layers of narrative, affect, and symbolic thought in complex and often surreal ways. Dream researchers refer to this form of logic as dream incorporation, the method by which real-world stimuli are integrated into the experiential narrative of the dreamer. This can happen in traditional psychoanalytic fashion, for example, in the way that the fear of public embarrassment can provoke anxiety dreams about missing an appointment or forgetting to put on one's pants. But dream incorporation can also be more directly stimulated, integrating physical and perceptual context into a dream as well. The classic stimulus method used in sleep studies is one called pressure cuff stimulation, in which an inflatable pressurized cuff is placed around the arm or leg of a subject while they sleep. When the subject reaches a state of REM sleep, the researcher inflates the cuff, putting pressure on the physical body of the dreamer. And interestingly, sleeping subjects notice this pressure at the same location on their body as it's being exerted. And their dreams are quick to incorporate the stimulus into the sleeping narrative so as to avoid waking them up. It may be as simple as dreaming that one's arm or leg is being held by someone else, or as complex as a sensation of paralysis or an indeterminate feeling of disequilibrium, What's important is not so much the specific way in which the narrative adapts the stimulus to the dream, as simply the fact that it does. Demonstrating a synthetic ability to create and sustain a dreamed reality, integrating external stimulus rather than allowing the dream to end. So to conflate these speculative streams, to use the logic of dreams to think about the experience of digital reality, is to suggest that there's something about how the technological world works that puts pressure on the human imagination. Further, this pressure, like the pressure cuff of dream research, manifests in waking life, most notably through the ways we quickly integrate elements of digital living into our normal modes of lived experience. In other words, digital stimuli are to waking life what sensory stimuli are to dreams. In my device dream, this was the story of how the dash captured my imagination with enough force to put pressure on the dream. It might be thought of as imprinting of the device upon a human mind. Or one might think of this relationship as a gesture towards Harman's notion of vicarious causation, not for its ontological claims, but for the importance Harman places on aesthetics or allure as a way of thinking in a doubled voice, just as a metaphor is literally two things at once. The pressure is real, but the dream narrative is too. And it's autonomous in the sense that the dream responds to the stimulus with an instinct of self-preservation and sustainability. To think about stimulus causation in dreams as vicarious is to insist that a dream incorporates stimuli in ways that are not accountable to the logic of real-world events, and therefore in some way demonstrative of a creative independence from this form of logic. In this way, it's possible to avoid an unnecessary competition between the real and the dream, and to begin to articulate the basis for an understanding of the ways that dreams are capable of catalyzing and sustaining real relationships. More important than the question of causality, however, is the realization that the imagination is permeable, both to dreams and to the real, an observation that grounds the possibility of thinking about dreams as a form of incorporated speculation. This intensifies the discussion since it implies that the logic of sleep incorporation is reversible. It's not just dreams that incorporate stimuli drawn from the real world, but reality too, that sometimes incorporates moments that began while asleep. Think of the category of dreams where one has a fight with a loved one and wakes up with a lingering feeling of angst or anger, a feeling that doesn't always go away right away, that sometimes persists even after one realizes it was just a dream. Sometimes the dream fight causes a real fight. And the same for any number of other nightmare-type experiences, in which one falls from a high place, loses teeth, is chased, forgets an exam or a classroom. The results of such dreams is often an abrupt awakening, with a racing heart and sweaty palms, sometimes even with a scream, moments where reality incorporates, for a time at least, the residual narrative of the dream itself. And sometimes these moments don't fade, instead becoming actual memories of events that never happened, real memories derived from imaginary sources. In the words of sleep researcher Shelley Adler, an exceptionally distressing episode of sleep, quote, may be sufficiently intense to elicit symptoms that could be mistaken as an emergent memory of an actual event, end quote. A prosthetic memory is born, dreamed into existence. And sometimes these sorts of dreams can even kill, as in the case of what's called sudden unexpected nocturnal death syndrome, SUNS, a rare but real phenomena when an otherwise healthy person dies in their sleep. So if one were to theorize this reversibility, it might be termed reality incorporation, and it might look a lot like a non-reality made somehow strangely real. One might place the concept into conversation with La Rouelle's notion of non-philosophy as a form of engagement that goes straight through the simulation of philosophy to a state of performance, exhausting itself as an imminent practice rather than as a program. In this case, one might wake up to the real world, but the dream persists. Reality incorporates it, and thus transforms the dream into a self-fulfilling performative reality of sorts, bound to the imminence of the moment rather than to a justification of what counts as dreamed or real. The dream disappears to itself, becomes a non-dream in a way that emphasizes that dream incorporation is not just a phenomena, but a modality of encounter. To propose a form of reality incorporation is to refuse to see dreams as simply a random encounter, and instead to take seriously the idea of incorporative logic as a way of understanding a form of illogical causality that yields a more complex interpenetration of cognitive spaces that we usually think of as distinct. This line of thinking can be made a bit more tangible by referring to the phenomenon known as exploding head syndrome, an experience that occurs at the edge of dreams, in which one hears a loud explosion in one's head just as one begins to fall asleep. While deemed clinically harmless, descriptions of the phenomena note that, quote, by the time the sufferer is wide awake, the sound is gone, but not surprisingly, it leaves in its wake a sense of great consternation and sometimes momentary difficulty in breathing, accelerated heart rate, and sweating. Unlike some instances of dream incorporation that are catalyzed by stimuli derived from outside of the mind, there's no known cause for exploding head syndrome. The best theories hypothesize that it occurs as a result of cognitive dissonance between different brain states, rubbing against each other as one enters the liminal zone before dreams. Friction, in other words, between the waking and sleeping minds. And if dream incorporation has a reversible counterpart, why not exploding head syndrome too? Instead of the sound of cognitive dissonance waking one up from hypnagogia, a dream, or something like the beginnings of a dream, erupts into the very reality of the day. And while it may be first recognizable as a racing heart, or an altered memory, or a pronounced ringing in the ears that seems to have come from nowhere, it came, in fact, from the imagination. If the conflation of dreaming logic and technical living is to be sustained, one might conjecture something like exploding head syndrome as its basis, a sound that emerges from the zone between waking and dreaming minds to create an effect with real-world impact, happening first only as an exceptional instance until the exception becomes the rule and a more ubiquitous version of the syndrome becomes an operational principle for technological reality. In other words, a sound that one knows only from a hypnagogic state begins to happen all the time, taking on the momentum of dreams that not only linger, but begin to spontaneously appear in the world of the everyday. Sometimes it's the realized science fiction of the world in which we live. Some of it is the unimaginable possibilities that are spoken to us without pause. Some of it's the dizzying accumulation of data drawn from network technology and its harvested minds, personalities uploaded to the cloud such as to facilitate an even more dreamlike experience. What's particularly interesting, however, is that when contextualized in this sort of metaphoric extension, both dream incorporation and exploding head syndrome translate to much more than dreamtime phenomena. They become new forms of logic that provide a way to conceptualize daytime situations in which memories, fears, and the imagination impact waking reality in real and notable ways. Importantly, to reconceptualize in this way is also to give a social and networked presence to the notion of the dream. No more do our dreams simply come from ourselves, nor would this form of exploding head be limited to the experience of an imaginary crash that wakes one up to the real. Furthermore, the reversibility of incorporative logic demands that the alternate possibility also be true, the possibility of someone else's dream, making a loud crash in the very reality of our daily existence, waking us up to the fact that we are already in the dream itself, someone else's dream, in fact. Jean Baudrillard once called for a lucidity pact as a way to position oneself under the sign of a dissipating real. For Baudrillard, this was about fostering a disbelief in reality, lest one be fooled by a simulation that presents itself too convincingly as a brighter, better, newer, and more optimized real. Baudrillard said this, reality, it's to your advantage not to believe in it, since if you believe in it and it doesn't exist, you're duped and swindled and you will die stupid. To spin this onerically, in terms of dreams, passing beyond lucidity to the technological fabric of the dream would be to make a pact with exactly the opposite of lucidity, to make a promise not to disbelieve the real, but to go along with the dream, choosing the logic of incorporation as the creative agent of delusion itself. It might be to choose to be fooled for as long as the loud sounds of the dreams can be made to persist. And indeed, this might be just exactly what is required for a world where the devices in my head increasingly tell me more about myself than I can perceive on my own, from my position to my pace, to my heart rate, to my mood, using the very bones of my body to conduct my voice to others, and speaking in ever more collaborative ways directly to the dream that is my reality, a world where dreams refuse to remain in the night and now begin to accompany us technologically in the everyday transactions of performative living. Thank you.